All right, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Strength Academy Podcast. I think we're on episode 38, right, Grayson?
That seems to be correct, yeah.
Yeah, and Grayson was just telling me about his training session last night, and I had programmed doubles for him in the snatch and the clean and jerk, and he managed to do something that I didn't think was going to be not impossible, but like highly unlikely. So he doubled 100 in the snatch, which is... like yep. close to his one rep max.
Yeah, five kilos below.
Yeah. And then on the clean and jerk, he did a complex sort of...
An accidental complex
to complete the doubles. But yeah, he got 120 on that. So
yeah, so that's within 5 kilos of my maxes. And I'm ready for a little bit of a break this week because we've been going real hard. Yeah. But... yeah, both times I clean and jerked this week, I was over 120, and both times I snatched, I was at or over 100. So things are headed in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely.
We're still working on one of my personal things that, because you know we're not perfect technicians by any means, and one of the things that always throws me off is I have a excess of pulling strength, and. When things get heavy, I tend to overpull on cleans and yeah. trying to power things. So I kind of accidentally PR'd a power clean. So I did a kind of a full clean, power clean combo as I got tired there. But, you know, continuing to work on, you know, my personal weaknesses, which is just squatting mobility and trusting that bottom position. Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, we're always working on our own stuff and trying to bring any insights we have from our own training into what we're helping others with.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the same thing for me. Like I went for a front squat 2 rep max, and I ended up getting 125 for a single 2 times, but I couldn't put them together. And it's just that upper thoracic mobility is something that I struggle with, and that's something that I have to continually work on and try to strengthen that that posture that I need to stay upright in the front squat. So
but yeah, so we're right there training with you guys, and you know, we're always kind of working on putting our kind of basic processes together and what sort of things we need to have in line to achieve what we want to do in the sport as well. Because you know, I really want to, you know, produce high level athletes and coach you know, beginners all the way up to, you know, national level competition. But I also have some unfinished business with weightlifting myself, and I think that there's some untapped potential there that I really want to try to keep pushing. So that kind of brings us to our topic for today, which is
exactly
so we're going to be kind of riffing off the concept of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is kind of his theory of like human motivation, right?
Yeah.
Like the things you need to have in order to the things he tried to make a broad thing, saying all societies require these stages to be formed and to have kind of that you know, happy, productive citizen, right?
Yeah, or it's also ties into like what drives behavior, and what drives the behavior at the most base level to the most, you know, high functioning level. And so it's a pyramid that is starts off with the base being physiological. So the things that you need to survive. So, I mean, that would include food, water, shelter, clothes, things like that.
Yeah.
Like, those are your basic needs. Those are things that you as a human being need to just be a human being.
One interesting thing that I thought in kind of reading up on this that he includes in that I think is really important is homeostasis. So
right.
he throws homeostasis in there, which I think is kind of a cool tie-in to the physiology that we're going to be discussing about. So his second rung on the ladder, there are 5, is personal safety. So that's going to be personal security, financial security, health and well-being, like knowing that you're going to have a place to stay tomorrow night. Yeah, like, and that you've got like a certain amount of stability. There aren't marauders roaming through your neighborhood, looting your house.
Yeah. It includes like safety, property, health, employment, things like that. So that falls and ties into those, that like physical base.
Yeah. So once you've met your basic needs of food and shelter, you have, the next need is security and safety. followed by social belonging. So that's friendships, family, social ties. So you can't really put the concept of the pyramid is you're building up as you go. You can't start with friendships and social ties if there's nothing secure in that environment. If you don't have access to basic needs, it's going to be really hard to cultivate strong familial relationships when everybody's just struggling to eat earthworms.
Yeah, it's hard to get along with other people when they're digging out of the same pile of food that you are. Like, it's just, you know, it's just anarchy at that point.
Yeah, and so, not the cool kind.
And not the kind that's glamorized, like we're talking about, like, real anarchy.
So once you have your social kind of network in place, the next would be self-esteem. So that's the desire for a person to have the respect of their peers, professions or hobbies to gain recognition. Yeah. They give them like a sense of value,
confidence, achievement, things like that. Things that you've accomplished or want, you know, like you're accomplishing, like moving up on the career ladder, getting a raise, getting a promotion. Like those are part of like esteem because they're helping you build confidence. They're helping you build another step on in your ability to do things and to accomplish, you know, things within your control.
Yeah. So you can kind of see how, when, you have your kind of esteem levels too low, you can have your basic needs met. You can have a social safety net. You can kind of be developing, you know, all of the, like social belonging, health and safety, that sort of stuff. But if you have very low esteem, you're still going to be a very unhappy person because you're not confident in your own abilities. And the final step is self-actualization, which is just kind of living up to your full potential within your definition of what your full potential means.
Yeah.
So living up to your own standards, feeling like you're really in control of yourself and your life and, you know,
Yeah. Part of that is like acceptance of facts, to like accepting reality for what it is. I think self-actualization at the top of the pyramid is like thriving. It's like thriving and being in the present moment, because like when I think about, I was telling Adi this the other day, fear and anxiety, they live in the future, and then remorse and regret live in the past, and those, none of those emotions exist in the present. So if you live in the present moment, like that's self-actualization, you're thriving, you're in the moment. Like all these other things have come together and you're able to be your best self because you're not distracted by the future or the past. You're just constantly in the present moment. And so how a lot of this carries over to weightlifting, and we're going to tie it in, believe me, we're going to tie it in, is that at the top, at the pinnacle, you're doing weightlifting because it's part of who you are. And it drives your every other behavior that you do is a motivating factor to get you to be a better weightlifter or a better athlete in general. So like when we're talking about the hierarchy of needs, we're talking about building up the base to get to a point to where you're doing this as almost like a professional. Like this is who you are. And so to be the best version of yourself as a weightlifter that you can be, there's going to be some things that you're going to have to cover at the ground level and get to that point. But, and we'll talk about a little bit. So like to start off with, if we wanted to convert this to a weightlifting pyramid, what would that look like to you, Grayson?
Well, I think that, most importantly is that you'd have to lay the weightlifting pyramid on top of the, pre-existing one, because I don't think that you can really, be starting down your weightlifting road if you don't have like the essentials kind of under wrap, and you don't have like a community and the stability to do so. So maybe our level five, our base level of the pyramid, would be overlaid on top of the self-esteem kind of realm. So I think that it's important to kind of think of them as being overlaid. But for me, when I was kind of thinking about, okay, well, what would our base need for weightlifting be? I kind of, it's a perfection of the base need in the first pyramid. So it's a perfection of food, hydration, sleep, time to do weightlifting, being healthy enough, being able to support yourself in your pursuit of it.
Right.
And I think that it's not just meeting the bare minimums for those things. I think it's being having access to being able to eat and sleep and kind of have the free time. Because if you're kind of, you know, toiling 13 hours a day in the coal mine, you're probably not going to have the time. So I think that for me, part of the base would be really having good quality on your food, hydration, sleep. So it's just the base level plus, basically, okay. for me.
The base level plus. All right. So, like, when I was thinking about it, I was looking at it as an entirely separate thing. Like, so I wasn't thinking about, oh, you have to have, like, this stuff covered. We're assuming that you have that stuff covered.
Okay.
So, and so when I looked at it, I was thinking about, like, the bottom level is just the need to train, right? Or the desire to train. So, like, if you don't have anything to do with the gym, then your ability to actualize yourself as a weightlifter is probably not going to be very high at all.
That's a very good point, yeah.
So, you have to have at least some desire or some need to train. So, right now, the zero level is people that don't want to have anything to do with the gym. And those people aren't going to be in the gym because they have no desire to train. They have no need to be stronger. They have no desire to be stronger. They have no desire to compete in a sport or compete at any level. And so, like, that level based desire has to be there. Like, there has to be some level of a person that says, I want to be stronger. I want to train. I want to compete at something. It may not be right now. That can be part of that actualization pyramid. But for some reason, there has to be a goal associated with training and becoming a weightlifter. So that has to be part of the base of the pyramid for me. And so, like, when people join the gym, you always ask them, like, what their intention is, why they're walking in the door. And for me, that's like, you know, do they want to lose weight? Do they want to get stronger? Do they want to compete? Did they used to play college sports and now they're just looking for something else to kind of fill the time? Because a lot of these people, they're coming to us and, you know, they do have those physical requirements covered, or else they wouldn't be trying to come to us for, like, a physical place to train.
That's true.
So for me, it's just like, what is their desire? Like, what is it that they want to achieve or get out of or build from becoming a weightlifter or coming to us and training with us at our facility? They don't necessarily have to be weightlifters, because we have other people that train just strength and conditioning or powerlifting. So, like, what is their goal? Like, what is their immediate desire to get out of training with us? So that for me is the base of the pyramid, and from there I can build on that, but I have to know exactly what it is that they want when they walk in the door.
Okay, yeah, I think I'm swayed by that argument. I think that, yeah, I could see that. If we take the assumption that you have these kind of underlying things met,
yeah.
Then yeah, I think that the desire to do it in general is definitely, yeah, I could see the argument for that being a solid base. So I might be restructuring. So, but for me, that enters in, but it enters in a little bit higher. Oh, so for me, the fourth, so the second layer up is, if you, you know, so looking at the way that I'm structuring this is that second need is you need to have access to be able to do things.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that you need to have perfect access. It doesn't mean that you need to be in a, you know, well outfitted gym like ours or anything like that, but at a bare minimum, you need access to a bar and plates, and you need to make sure that those things are there. Because we've all seen videos of people training in less than ideal circumstances,
yeah.
But in order to train, you still need a baseline of equipment. So for me, access was my second rung.
Okay. And so, like, for me, I guess the second one would kind of tie into, like, the type of equipment and facility that you have. So, like,
yeah.
And so, like, once you find the desire, because, like, you can work, if you have the desire, you can work out of your garage, and or you can work out in a field in Cameroon. Like, I've seen those dudes lifting, like, on a real rusty bar with wooden plates that probably aren't near the approximate amount of kilos that they need to be. But that desire has driven them to try to build something that they can use to accomplish their training. So the second part of that is actually having equipment that's geared toward weightlifting. So like a lot of people will train and they'll use pound plates, but we're a sport that doesn't use pounds. So if you want to be competitive in weightlifting, I mean, it's kind of like showing up to a track and field event wearing slides. You know, you're a little bit unsuited for the task. So the rest of the world uses kilograms as a measurement of weight. In America, we use the imperial system, which we use pounds and ounces and things like that. So like we have a different standard of measurement, but when it comes to this sport, we use kilograms. So your ability to count your own weights and do things like that is simplified when you use the units of measurement that are used in competition. So like if you're come from a background where you're constantly having to convert pound plates to kilogram plates, just forget the pounds. Like convert all your numbers into kilograms and just start working off of kilograms. So like this is and this is part of the need, and this is why we're talking about it, is like, yeah, you're in the garage, you have pound plates, but don't think of them as pound plates anymore. Think of them as kilo plates that got converted to pounds instead of the other way around. So just start thinking in kilos, because like when you show up to competition, and I don't know how it's going to be for AO2, but there seems to be like a lot of new people that are going to be, this is going to be their first time showing up to a competition like this. Everything's in kilos, guys. None of it is in pounds. Nobody's gonna convert it for you. There's not going to be a conversion on the side saying, oh, this is the chart that, you know, this is what I need to lift next. Nobody's going to do that for you. It's all in kilos.
If you declare 140, they are going to assume you're talking about kilos.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, if you show up and you're having to do all these number calculations, you're just going to stress yourself out. So just a basic need of the sport that we're building on is the idea that you have to use equipment and methodologies that are associated with that sport. So for weightlifting, it's going to be kilograms. It's going to be plates and barbells that are in kilograms and that are suited for weightlifting. So preferably a needle bearing bar or a bearing bar, as opposed to something like a ball bearing, something that spins fast. Like, you don't have to have perfect equipment.
At least a good quality bushing bar.
Yeah, at least a good quality bushing bar. But you don't have to have the most perfect stuff, but that's a basic need. That's part of the base of the pyramid. It's like training on equipment that's going to make you a better weightlifter, and not using all your gear all the time either. So that's part of it. So all the support equipment, like wrist wraps, belt, knee wraps, things like that, like try to train, use days where you go without it, especially like if it's a day where you don't even hit 85%, 80% on some of the stuff that you're supposed to do, try training without it. It's just going to make you a better weightlifter when you don't have to depend on a bunch of other extra stuff to do it. So like for me, that's that second safety part of the pyramid, is like building up your ability to do weightlifting.
Yeah, and I think we've got overlap there in that, you know, you need to have access to the equipment, right, and you need to be able to perform the training.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, we're seeing eye to eye, like for sure. It's just a little bit of overlap on where those things belong and how they fit in.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think So if you kind of look at you know, that second thing, even if you don't have perfect access or you don't have perfect things, you need a bar, you need plates, and you need to be shifting your mentality to thinking about the sport as the sport is performed, which is in kilograms. I think that, yeah, you can work in like personal equipment, like are you using wraps? Do you have a pair of shoes? These sort of things. Eventually, yeah, I think shoes are pretty important. And just making sure that you have access to, if you lift in a gym with low ceilings and you can't put a weight overhead, you're not going to learn how to jerk.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, you need to have access to a setting that allows you to facilitate doing training.
Agreed.
For me, I put, for my third tier was, it's kind of tied into, the pursuit of self-esteem a little bit, but, so I use the phrasing, the will to power, but I think you need, like an internal drive to achieve mastery. Okay. So once you have, you know, if we're looking at the base pyramid as a general, base the pyramid as a general interest, mm-hmm. and you have access and you know what the lifts are, you need to have in place on top of that general interest, you need to have a very specific internal drive to achieve mastery over yourself and okay. over the technique. So you need to have an internal drive to be really, really willing to push and try to do the best weightlifting that you can. And I think that comes along with a willingness to defer momentary pleasures for a larger goal.
Yeah.
So I think okay. that needs to be in place. And I think of that slightly differently than I'm interested in weightlifting. Because if we're looking at this as like stages you go through,
right.
if you show an interest and you have the baseline of, you know, you can eat enough and you have the time to dedicate to training, then you need to have the access, and then you need to have the will to master the technique and the complicated thing, and you need to be willing to take the long view.
Right.
And I think that if we're looking towards reaching the pinnacle of your career, you need to have something inside that's telling you you need to achieve mastery in this, and you need to enjoy the process of self-betterment a lot and be willing to forego certain things that don't fit into that that drive.
Right.
You know, it's you need to be willing to put it in the bank for later so that you get that result that you want and you get that greater happiness when you accomplish the larger goal, rather than, well, I'm super sore and I don't want to be sore anymore, so I'm just going to skip the gym today.
Right.
Like, you need to be willing to put off comfort and kind of rein yourself in, and kind of I think as this discipline comes into
discipline
that
area, probably yeah. is part of yeah a big part of it. So like, for as far as that goes, like that third, that middle part of the pyramid for me, so if like we're building up from you don't work out at all to you work out because you think you need to do it to look good, or you want to do it to be a certain way, the third part is going to be like showing up to training every day and looking forward to it. So like you're starting to get into that part of the pyramid where like you want to be there, you want to train, and you want to get better at it. So that self-mastery is part of that middle part of the pyramid for me as well. But I think another part that ties into it is environment and coaching. Because there's a lot of weightlifters out there who have the desire to train, and they do, and they have facility and equipment, but they're missing part of what makes a successful weightlifter is like coaching and environment. Whether that's a team environment, or if you like to train solo, like for me, I like to train solo. Like, I don't mind. Like, I don't have to have 10 other people there training with me to accomplish my training. I still enjoy it whether I'm there by myself or not. So for me, like, the actual team environment isn't as important, but a coach is important, because a coach helps you stay on track, helps you make corrections when you need them, and reinforces the fact that you're going in the right direction. So if you don't have that, the ability for you to climb up the rest of the pyramid is kind of be stunted. And so you can stunt your own growth by selecting a coach that doesn't have the ability to get you to those other levels. So like, is it bad to take chances on a new coach? No, of course not, because everybody needs to learn. But if you go to a coach that's teaching people technique that's incorrect, and you know it's incorrect, you've seen other people lift and you know what looks right, and you'll know the difference. As soon as you've been doing it for more than 3 or 4 months, you'll realize, oh, that's not really that great of a technique. Like, you'll recognize when you go to other competitions and you see other people lift, you're like, oh, that doesn't seem right at all. Like, maybe it's time to move on to a different like coach, because like, not everybody has the ability to be like a great coach, I think. Like, and I know everybody's not doesn't have the ability to be a great athlete. So I think coaching is kind of the same way. Is like, there has to be a specific mindset that goes along with wanting to help others achieve their best, and not just like so you can get personal recognition, but really honestly leaving a legacy of building athletes that have over time proved themselves to get to the levels that you're able to help them reach. So I think coaching and environment play an integral part in that middle part of the pyramid, which is like, I guess it would be love and belonging, but it's also like tied in with that. So love and belonging being the program and the coach that you're under. So you can thrive under a good coach, or you can flounder under a bad one. So this is part of that weightlifting success, like, thing that we talked about, like the factors that go into it. Like, you're who you choose to guide you along the journey is just as important as the journey itself, because you can be led in the wrong direction.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I think that tying into the coaching, like, one of the added benefits of receiving some sort of guidance throughout what you're doing is we are horrible at evaluating ourselves objectively.
Yeah.
And even if you are familiar with the principles of programming and you understand how to identify weaknesses, you're never going to be truly objective with yourself.
Yeah.
And if you're writing your own workouts and you're kind of constructing your own program, a lot of times you're going to avoid doing the things that you dislike doing. You're going to, you know, skip front squats because you just like back squatting more, and front squatting super uncomfortable. And it's going to take somebody else saying, no, you're not doing front squats because you dislike them. You have to do them until you like them.
Right.
You know, having that kind of objective feedback and that kind of ability to, you know, have a reasonable idea of where you're at. And yeah, I think there's definitely differences in quality amongst coaches. I think that a lot of that
and personalities too.
Yeah,
you're not going to get along with
sometimes some personalities. Yeah, you're just not going to jive.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, you want to find somebody that kind of coaches you in a way that is the way that you need to be coached. And if it's just something that's not working, or you feel like you're banging your head against the wall, yeah, then maybe, you know, kind of.
And I'm
move
not
on.
Saying baby them either, but there has to be an objectivity as a coach to say, like, this person's not going to like this, but it's going to make them better.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that comes down to just like experience as a coach, and then also just how infected your coach's mind is with obsession over these sort of things. Because I think that there's...
You have a question. Yeah, go ahead and finish that, but I have a question for you.
Okay, yeah. So I think that, you know, there's some people that have the ability to coach and then turn it off and don't really think about it outside of the few hours a week that they're doing it.
Right.
And then I think there are people that lie awake at night wondering how to get so-and-so's front squat up, or wondering why this is that the thing that we tried wasn't working. And, right, you know, like, I think, so there's levels of kind of investment as far as on the coach's end too, because we, I think Robin was telling us about, a friend of hers in California who was kind of asking about, how to do things at a meet. And they were saying that their coach was going to charge them to go. They were going to, like, charge them money so that they'd go to a local meet with them and run their cards.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was a thing that just, like, struck me as, what do you mean?
Like, what are you talking about?
That's part of the coaching. You already paid for that when I wrote your program to peak you for the meet. Yeah. If I can go, I'm going to go. And I think that, you know, so there's varying levels of investment from, yeah, the coach as well. So if you're really invested in yourself becoming the best weightlifter, you need to find a coach that's going to obsess over you becoming the best weightlifter too.
Yeah. So, and the question that I wanted to ask is, like, when coaches mess up too, like, and coaches make mistakes, and, like, some of them, obviously the mistakes are more, they can be anywhere from, like, they cost you an injury to, oh, maybe I shouldn't have programmed that many front squats this week. Like, he's a little beat up. So, when it comes to, like, coaches who are former athletes that, let's say they've gotten busted for, you know, a drug infraction or something like that, and they start doing seminars, or, like, do you think that those coaches still have valid sources of information? Or do you think that just because they got their medal taken away at the 2012 London Olympics, you should never go to their seminar?
I mean, that's kind of hard, because I think that there are certain rules in place. Like, I know that the Australian rules made it so that if anybody went to one of Sonny Webster's seminars, they would get a ban for associating with a coach that had failed drug protocol.
Okay. Okay.
And I think that in USAW, there's some rules like, you know, if we were caught putting a bunch of our athletes on drugs and running a doping operation, people would not be allowed to associate with us and be in good standing with USAW.
Yeah, I think you
lose. I don't know how retroactive drug tests and seminars go, because I think that there are certain things that you can pick up from high-level athletes. Like, absolutely. And I think that there's a lot of... Because if these athletes have been coming up in a system, so, like, if you're thinking about, like, Alexi Tarukti...
Alexi or, like, Norik Vardanian. So, like, I went to a seminar with Norik and Jenny Arthur. So Norik Vardanian and Jenny Arthur were traveling around doing seminars. They just happened to come to Santa Fe. And so I went. But under the time, Norik was serving a ban. And so, like, it didn't change the information that he provided to me. And I still use some of the things that he said in that seminar in my warm-ups and in my approach in weightlifting. But, like, you know, he was banned. Like, he still has his own gym. I think he actually is starting to coach other athletes now. But, like,
yeah, I think his ban is up very, very soon.
Yeah. So he's going to start competing again. But, like, so, like I said, people mess up and they make mistakes. But, I mean, they're still valuable sources of information.
I'd agree with that. I think you can... If you pay attention hard enough, you can learn something from anybody. Yeah. And I think that high-level athletes have spent years with high-level coaches. Norik Vardanian spent a lifetime with his father.
Yuri?
Who was one of the best weightlifters ever. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think that just because somebody's, you know, had some sort of a failure of a drug test or is a former... athlete doing kind of technical seminars and stuff.
Sure.
I think that those are good things, and that, you know, you can pick up a lot of good information watching their little clips of, here's my trick for finding a good jerk split position. But what you have to separate is what a seminar is or purchasing a program is versus actually having coaching.
Yeah, having coach.
And I think that if you look at the seminars as a way of picking up tidbits or little information to put into practice, or you think of the program as a general roadmap and you're going to kind of follow it, I think those are kind of more a la carte services rather than finding yourself a coach that's invested in, hey, did you go to bed on time last night?
Yeah.
Did you, you know, like, yeah, make, like, Alexi... who can make adjustments day of? Because if you don't have somebody in person, it's really hard to say, oh, you're looking awesome, go up.
Yeah.
Or, oh, this was a terrible idea, let me reprogram this real quick and kind of shift it to what you can actually do for the day.
Yeah, because, like, a lot of those guys will sell you a program and say, here's my front squat program, but that's the end of it. You're not going to get any feedback. You're not going to get any, like, mid-course correction of...
They're not,
like,
going to tell you if your front squat technique is good enough to be doing the front squat program.
Yeah, so, like, they're not going to evaluate your mobility or anything like that. They're just going to sell you a template, and that's the end of it. Like, they're not going to show up to your meet and count your cards or check on you or do anything else. So, like, that's not really coaching. So, a little bit off topic, a small digression, but I think it's still a part of that pyramid, and I think essential part of it. And
that kind of ties into what was the fourth level for me. So, this is the second to last level on the way up. Right. And I think that once you have your basic needs, which includes an interest in doing it, food, hydration, all of that stuff, a desire to get into the gym, then you have access to the required equipment to do so, an internal drive to kind of get there, and a willingness to take guidance. For me, number four is kind of a big chunk, and it might be the one that takes the longest time. Because for me, number four on the way up is going to be achieving as close to perfect technique as you can and developing high levels of strength.
Okay.
Because once you have the desire to do it, and you have maybe somebody helping you out along the way, or you maybe just have a really good insight into yourself and you're really pushing and knowing what you need to work on, the fourth step towards achieving the best you can do in weightlifting is putting in a lot of hard work, getting your technique as close to perfect as you can get, and getting as strong as you possibly can. Yeah. And that, to me, is what the kind of penultimate level of the pyramid is.
Yeah. And it's very similar for me. So in that fourth level, under self-esteem, so if we go back to what surrounds it, it's respect for others, respect by others, achievement, things like that. So you've gone from that level of, like, I'm just working out to I'm working out to try to look good, to I'm working out because I want to and I enjoy this, to now you're in that fourth level of, oh, I can be good at this. I'm going to take this to the next level. And so you start to put this as a precedent. It starts to take precedence over everything else. So, like, your sleep, your recovery, your diet starts to be surrounded by achieving a high-end goal in weightlifting. So, like, it becomes part of who you are. So for me, that this part of the pyramid is that you're below self-actualization, but you're building confidence. You're getting stronger. You are starting to develop technique. And you're also starting to develop higher level goals, like, oh, I want to reach this level. I want to get to the AO finals. I want to get to nationals. I want to make an international team. Like, these are the areas where, like, your identity is starting to be grounded as a weightlifter. Like, so you start identifying yourself as a weightlifter. So it's not just like, oh, I just go to the gym, or I lift weights, or, you know, so I snatch and clean and jerk. You're like, you start calling yourself a weightlifter. And so, like, for me, this part of the pyramid is definitely, like, you're hitting at least a body weight snatch. You're clean and jerking close to 2.5, you know, close to 2 times your body weight, you know, stuff like that. This is that area where you're starting to get mastery over your technique, build strength, and become just a better version of an athlete of from where you started out. So, like, for me, this part of the pyramid is those people that are starting to aspire to be more than just your local weightlifter, like, be at a local competition. And so they're starting to gear their lives toward making that a functional reality.
Yeah, and would you agree that this is kind of the point that's going to take the longest?
Oh, yeah,
so
this is definitely the longest.
Distributed, like, the amount of time it is in each phase, like, if this was duration, this would probably take up maybe even 50% of my pyramid.
Yeah, I would say, like, yeah, it would look very strange, obviously.
Yeah, it wouldn't.
But for a timeline purpose, I would say it would take, yeah, maybe like 5 or 6 years, possibly.
Yeah, you know, it's and it's kind of an unlimited window, because it sort of flirts with the top level, which is for me is just self-actualization again.
Yeah.
Which is lifting the most weight that you have the potential to lift.
Right.
And I think you might not know when you get there. Like, I think if you're always improving your technique and you're always improving your strength and you're correcting for weaknesses and you're continuing to drive, you're not going to know that you've hit the peak till you're on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a little bit, I mean, unless maybe you get to go to the Olympics or something.
Yeah.
But even then, yeah, you probably still, I think the people at the Olympics still feel like they could total more. They still go back to the drawing board.
Right.
Like, you hardly ever see somebody qualify for an Olympics and then say, that's it, I'm never lifting anymore ever again. Like,
yeah,
you don't see it very often.
Unless it does happen.
Unless it's their, like, sixth Olympics in a row or something like that. You know,
yeah,
like Oscar or Figueiredo or whatever, who retired.
Yeah,
the
I
last.
Saw, like, Brian Reisenhauer. He just had an IG post recently that said he was retiring from weightlifting.
Oh, really?
And, like, he had made an international team. Like, he was on Pan Ams and went to World, I think, last year.
Huh.
Like, he was on a World team, literally. And then this year he's just kind of like, no, I guess not gonna happen.
Well, and I mean, I think, you know, if you hit the point where that voice in your head isn't saying do more,
mm-hmm,
then you know you're kind of on the other side of that. Because, yeah, I mean, if you achieve everything that you want to achieve, the hard part kind of becomes, well, what do you do then? Which is why I have, you know, master's goals and
yeah,
stuff, like, because I want to keep keep having, you know, stuff to work towards as I go forward. But
well, it goes back to like what you were saying about being able to delay gratification and kind of have some self-discipline too. Is like you can burn yourself out on anything. It's not just weightlifting. It's not just, you know, whatever it is that you pick up. You can burn yourself out on literally anything if you devote your entirety to it. And so I think at the fifth level for self-actualization, it's the point where this is all you want to do. Like, this is your profession almost. Like, this is, your life is centered around weightlifting. Like, you are a weightlifter. And if something happened and you got injured and it was taken away from you, you would lose part of your identity. So for me, that's the part of self-actualization, is like you identify yourself so highly with being a weightlifter that like to have it, any part of it stripped from you would create an identity crisis. So, and that kind of plays into the original hierarchy of needs, is when you reach the self-actualization point, like whatever it is that you're doing with your life, you associate yourself with that thing. Like if you were in the military, and Grayson and I talked about this earlier, about how we spent so much time in the military. You're told when to get up, what to do, where to be, when to be there, and what to wear. And then you get out and nobody's telling you any of those things anymore. You have zero structure. You have zero people telling you, you know, what you're supposed to do, why you're supposed to do it, or, you know, when you're supposed to do it, or like anywhere you're supposed to be, or what direction you're supposed to take. So then you're kind of lost. So it's a little bit like that, where you, if you get to the point where if a part of weightlifting was stripped away from you, you're at that level of self-actualization. Like, it doesn't have to be you lift a specific weight. Like, you don't have to snatch 100 or clean and jerk 300 pounds or whatever. Like, I don't think there's a specific point that self-actualization is a benchmark. There's no benchmark for it. It's where you identify so strongly with it that it becomes part of who you are. Like, so for me, that's that final part of the pyramid. And like, I think not a lot of people reach that. And that's what I think holds people back a lot of the time, is like they have a lot of the pyramid covered. They have a lot of the things that they need to be great. It's just that they're missing that self-identification of, this is what I am.
Well, and it's the level of kind of sacrifice required to restructure everything around weightlifting, because this is not the pyramid of needs for being a pretty good recreational lifter and getting some stress out and enjoying it and having fun and doing snatches and doing squats, and you're going to make good progress doing that. That's fine. But you know, if you're really trying to do the most weight that you possibly can, there's going to have to be that making it a priority.
Yeah.
And if that means essentially making weightlifting your part-time job, because if you're working 40 hours a week, but you're spending, you know, what, on average, 10, 12 hours a week in the gym, and then that doesn't include the time that you're meal prepping and trying to sleep for 8 hours and doing your sauna and doing your recovery and all that other stuff. If you start to piece it together, the vast majority of the time in your day is spent around what you're going to be doing in the gym. It's, when do you take your lunch break at work? What do you eat at your lunch break? What do you eat right before the gym? All of these sort of things count as training. And if you're not, you know, really restructuring your existence around the goal, then it's fine if that's not your number one goal.
Yeah.
Like, and that, I don't want people to feel discouraged. Yeah. Like, oh, I don't want to do. It's like, no. Like, that's not what we're saying.
Right.
We're just saying if you want to win a national championships, you probably have to have these things in place.
Right. And that's why we're talking about the hierarchy of it. It's not exactly like where you need to be. But if we had to translate weightlifting's hierarchy into like a pyramid, this is what it would be to be the best weightlifter that you could be. And we're not talking about like, we're not discouraging anybody from saying, oh, well, I don't want to aspire to that level. That's fine. You go back to a different part of the pyramid. And the pyramid,
yeah, or maybe your self-actualization is being a good local lifter and competing for years and years and staying healthy.
Yeah,
and you know, like your definition of what your self-actualization is going to kind of be up to you. Right. You know, you get to choose what your kind of life's work is.
Yeah,
you know, you get to choose your goal, and as long as you're not listening to other people telling you what your goal is, and you know, so you can kind of. You know, if your primary goal is to make an impact in your career, whether that's, you know, research or, you know, counseling, these sort of things, if that's the goal is to make an impact with that, and then weightlifting serves a purpose driving you towards that, that's kind of a different thing than if your goal is weightlifting in itself, then I think that these things need to be kind of in order, and you need to be really... compelled almost irrationally towards pursuing strength.
Yeah.
Like, I think that we've kind of talked about how weightlifting becomes a bit of an obsession, and
but that's also what separates like champions from the people who don't ever get there either. Like, so like, yeah, I know that there's going to be a lot of people that don't fit into the champion mold, and that's fine. But for the purposes of, like, when we say we want to get to the top of the pyramid, we're talking about the people that are trying to be champions. So, like, we're not discounting or excluding the people that are trying to do it to be healthy, but you have a different setup than the other person in that pyramid. So, like, it goes back to that base part of it. It's like, why are you doing it? What's your desire? Like, if your desire is just to look good and be healthy, that's fine.
You can definitely do both of those things with weightlifting.
Yeah, you can definitely do those things. But when it comes to self-actualization in the pyramid, like, you're probably not going to identify as a weightlifter in that part of your motivation.
So, or at least as powerfully, you know, or at least not solely.
Right, so, like, that's what self-actualization is when you identify solely with something. So, like, as a coach, do you refer to yourself as a coach? Like, when you introduce yourself to somebody, like, this is Coach Grayson, like, you automatically, your identity is invested in that. Like, you identify as a coach. Like, you do things that coaches do. You say things that coaches say. You know, you live a lifestyle that is supportive of you being a coach to other people.
Right? Yeah.
Because you have to be there for other people to see their workouts, to see, you know, their progress, and to write programs for them and make corrections and be there for meets and do all the things that we were talking about as far as like coaching goes. But you identify as a coach. Like, you see, you're part of who you are as a coach. And so that's different than somebody that just teaches one CrossFit class during the week to pay for their membership.
Yeah.
So like, that's the difference to me, is like, do we want everybody to be, the best athlete they can be? Of course we do, right? But some people aren't going to want to contribute the time and effort that it takes to do that. And so as when we're talking about self-actualization and the pyramid of weightlifting, the pinnacle is identifying as a weightlifter and being and surrounding yourself with the things that you need to do to be the best possible version of that athlete that you can be.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, being, you know, we talking about like whether certain people can fit the mold of like actually achieving a champion as a weightlifter, like, you might do everything right and restructure everything around,
right,
and you'll end up being better than you would if you hadn't done that, but you might not reach the highest level, but that doesn't really matter as far as your esteem and your self-actualization goes, because I think that, you know, like we talk about every week, the lessons that you get from delaying gratification will apply to everything else that you do. And the things that you learn about yourself through training and restructuring and pursuing, because I don't think it necessarily matters whether or not the goal you set is achieved, but as long as you push as hard as you can to it.
Yeah.
And that's why I like the idea of like a lofty goal, you know,
right.
where it's, you know, you're, because if you look at like the most successful people, there's always another book they wish they had written
yeah.
or another thing. Like they're always trying to like push themselves because that's just kind of what you do.
Right.
And if you're, you know, so like these sort of things could apply to, you know, writing or any goal that you have, figuring out what are your base steps to get there. And then what do you need to do to build up, I think is a useful way of looking at things
yeah.
in general.
And I agree with that. I think that you can reach that self-actualization stage without being a national champion or, you know, being an Olympian. Like you can identify as a weightlifter. It can be something that you're totally consumed with, although you still have a day job.
Yeah.
You know, so like, it's not exclusive, but I think that a lot of the time when we set out to achieve something, we don't realize that if we just put a little more effort into it, we could be a lot better at it. And that's like where the drop off is for me, is just, I know that people are capable of so much more a lot of the time. They just don't want to dedicate the time to it. And that can be frustrating as a coach, because like you want them to succeed. You want them to be, you know, at the level that you know that they can get to, but sometimes they just don't want to give up something to get there.
It's most of the time it's beer.
Well, yeah, it's like, I don't like beer. Like so for me, I don't understand the allure of it, but yeah, I get it. Like I get that part of it's social, part of it's, you know, I don't know, just
people need to unwind.
Unwind, you know? Yeah. But
yeah, so I think that, you know, having that degree of you know, a little bit of personal sacrifice and how much you're willing to give up to get a little bit more yeah. out. And I know that, you know,
but that can apply to anything too.
Like, yeah.
So like, even as business owners, just like, we identify ourselves as business owners. Like when you say you own a gym, like that's part of who you are now.
Yeah.
And so like, we can dedicate as much effort and time to it as we need to, or we can just slack off and just try to get by with the bare minimum. And either way, it's up to us to try to drive the direction of, you know, how we want things to go.
Yeah, and I think, I would agree with that. You definitely need to have, I think people need a challenge to overcome
yeah.
or a pursuit of something. I think that if you get complacent or stagnant and you're not constantly trying to master something, anything, yourself, your discipline, you know, your writing process, your coach's eye, your snatch technique, these sort of goals that aren't definite, you know, because there's no point where you're done getting stronger.
Right.
There's no point when you're done getting your technique refined, you know. There's always a little thing you can do better. There's always an area that you could be stronger.
Well, the strength is in the struggle.
Yeah.
Like there's no strength in accomplishing the easy thing. Like you don't get strong from the 40% warm-up reps that you do. That's just extra work. Like you get strong from that 70% range up. That's why we call them working weights. Like you're struggling to get better at those weights, at those percentages. Like you're the strength is in the struggle, and that applies to anything. It's like you have to have some kind of adversity or some kind of obstacle to overcome to increase your capability to overcome a new obstacle.
Yeah, and I think that important within that is that trying to do something and failing at it is just as important
yeah.
as actually doing it, because yeah. every time you develop that resilience to failure, where it's, well, that didn't work out this time, but I'm going to do it again and I'm going to try harder, or I'm going to reframe how I'm thinking about this, or I'm going to approach it from a slightly different angle.
Right.
But not being discouraged by failure, or
where does discouraged that fit by in the stagnation, pyramid,
I, you know, that's, I don't know. That might be up with self-actualization.
I was thinking maybe self-esteem.
Yeah.
Like, because if your self-esteem is high enough, a failure won't necessarily look like a failure. It'll just look like an unsuccessful attempt.
Yeah.
Like, it's not something that derails your progress. You're like, oh, I'm not a weightlifter anymore because I missed, you know, a snatch. Like, it's just one snatch. Like, in the grand scheme of things, you're still a weightlifter.
And but, with the esteem thing, like, when your esteem is low, like, I know for my personal experiences, like, and I've been good for a while now, but I had a pretty bad bout of just being super depressed all the time. Like, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago before I had you kind of start writing program for me.
Okay.
I was, you know, barely making time to work out, and I wasn't feeling particularly motivated to keep up with my stretching. So then when I did work out, stuff would just hurt and I'd just give up and do something pointless, and I was just kind of changing my mind all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, so you're gonna have those times that things kind of fall apart or don't really feel right. But if you kind of just try to still keep moving towards something, and even if it doesn't work out, you can get through that time and get back into your rhythm, or, you know, fall in love with training again.
Yeah.
Or like all of these sort of things. And, you know, so there's going to be a lot of ups and downs as you kind of pursue anything.
Yeah, that's
and
true for everything.
It's really easy to kind of lose hope sometimes, or get discouraged or distracted, or kind of forget why it was important to you in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think that's where that base level of what's my need, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And if you lose sight of that and you can't really see past the fact that you're still making that same error in the snatch, and we've tried a bunch of different things and it's still happening, it's easy to get discouraged enough to kind of give up in some of those situations. And having that, accepting that it's okay to feel like that sometimes, but still, if you're, you know, depressed or hurt or it's just not going the way, just go in and do the bar. Or
yeah.
Just go in and do something. And eventually you'll get yourself back on track. But it's definitely really hard when esteem is low and you wake up and you're like, I'm a terrible person and I hate everything about myself today.
Yeah.
It's really hard to kind of muster good energy for training. So
or
I think
when
that
you have
the
to
esteem
start over
is in
too.
There. Yeah.
Like when you get sick and you lose 17 pounds and then you have to rebuild everything, and like even just the barbell feels like it's a ton of weight. Like that sucks. Like it's an uphill climb, but it's possible to get back there and beyond if you want it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, because we've both kind of had, you know, you had a medical issue, and then I was just having some psychological stuff. But, you know, we both kind of went through some of those struggles over the last year.
Yeah.
Where it just feels like everything's falling apart. Where it's like, you know, oh man, I was at this level and now I can barely do this anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't understand what's wrong with the way that I'm doing things, and I'm not moving the way that I want to, and things are just not quite right.
Yeah.
But we managed to, I think, and this is kind of that social support, is we've kind of managed to keep each other on track.
Yeah.
And focused on, no, you had a bad day today, but we're still improving.
Yeah.
From last week, and we're still moving in the right direction. Because I think you know, you need to have people in your life that'll help keep you on track.
Yeah.
Towards those goals. And that's where, you know, being a member of a club is a little bit better than being on your own, because when you're on your own, you don't have anybody saying, hey man, it's okay, just drop 10%
yeah.
of your squats and get a couple more reps in, you're just having a bad day today. And just keep working where you can. And if you fail to hit the percentages this week, we'll make an adjustment and we'll keep on going. And I think it's pretty important to have that kind of network together there.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, so that kind of concludes the discussion that we were having. And more than anything, this was just something that Grayson and I kind of wanted to flesh out on our own. And we were just thinking about it and thought that we would share our thoughts on it with all of you. So
yeah, so hopefully that was like a little bit coherent.
Yeah.
Munu and I both wrote our own pyramids and compared them. to Maslow's hierarchy. So if you're listening in and you can look it up, you can kind of see a visual representation that might help with things a little bit. Yeah. But hopefully that wasn't too hard to follow, guys.
No. And if you guys have any questions or maybe you've got feedback, what your own take on the hierarchy of the needs might be for a weightlifter, let us know. You can reach out to us at asaweightlifting@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram. I'll try to reply in a timely manner, but I don't really spend as much time as I should probably, like, going back and forth with people. But yeah, if you have anything you want to add or if you have any questions, just reach out to us.
Yeah, go ahead and like and review. Subscribe to the podcast if you're a fan. Share it with a friend. And until next week, guys, we'll see you later.
All right, y'all. Lift without regrets.